Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this week's podcast of The Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, AC/DC rock Behemoth, Brian Johnson and Angus Young headbang through their brand new single, Shot in the Dark. Scottish literary genius Ian Rankin tells tales behind his 26th Inspector Rebus book, A Song for the Dark Times. The sweetheart of British telly, Claudia Winkleman, gives us the lowdown on her lockdown-penned new book, Quite. And Spice Girl Mel C invites us to boogie with her through her 8th solo album, Melanie C. All of that and loads more still to come. Now, Dapper Dave, who's first?
There's been a disturbance in the rock and roll force recently, but we're pleased to report order has been restored. Their new single, Shot in the Dark, is out today and the new album is on the way. They are back in black and 2020 just got a whole lot rosier. Please welcome from AC/DC, the legendary Brian Johnson and Angus Young!
Hey!
Rock and roll!
How are you? Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. First of all, come in, Angus. Whereabouts are you? What the heck is the time wherever you are?
It's in the evening, getting on to about nearly 8:30, and I'm out here in Sydney.
We're recording this interview on Monday, and it's Brian's birthday today, as you may have just heard. Brian, I haven't seen you for ages. What are you doing later for your birthday drinks, and where do I need to be and when?
What am I doing on my birthday? Interviews mainly, but... I'll probably get together with some buddies tonight and have a nice dinner, you know, and
get
blottoed. So you said the phone's been ringing all morning, Brian. Who's the most interesting person you've had a happy birthday off apart from us lot?
I think Donald Duck Dunn, who nobody knows, but he's the best player with Booker T and the MGs. He was a character.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. We'll take that. Angus, what have you got him for his birthday, apart from a new single?
I'll need to get it zoomed out to him, but I'll think of something good. Probably, you know, he likes good old... he's a big fan of old war books. I'll get him a good war book.
Happy birthday.
Thanks,
okay, here's another catastrophe. Happy birthday. All right, anything but a catastrophe is this new single. Now, Angus, many of us feared this would never happen this day again. It has. When did the process begin this time around?
Yeah, 2018, around August, we all got together. Brian, myself, Cliff, Phil, and my nephew, Stevie. And it was a case of, you know... had a lot of material from over the years that me and Malcolm, my brother, had done, and we just wanted to get in a studio and see, you know, how we would do all, you know, how it would all go together, you know. And it was really good. It was, you know, everyone was really vibey and everyone wanted to be on board. So, you know, I think the result speaks for itself when you hear the album, you know, it's definitely, you know... Good, powerful album from us.
Yeah,
it's a full-on AC/DC sound. I've heard the single, I haven't heard the album yet. Can't wait to hear the album. So, Brian, what was that like for you? What was that trepidation like for you? You know, was there a will she or won't she moment? Did you ever worry that this day might not come again?
Well, obviously, but you know, once we got together again and we got into that studio, you know, the feeling of, you know, like family, can I say that? Does it sound too puny? But, you know, we just had a bond that just builds, well, for nearly 40 years, you know. And we'll go into the studio and the boys, you know, fired up, you know, the gear. And we started hearing the stuff that Ang had brought in, which was just... you know, to us, we were just going, oh, my God, that's good stuff. And it's just that feeling, you know, we just got charged, you know. And it was wonderful because it has been a long time. And, you know, and it was just, I don't know, it was just a great feeling. And I think it's come out under the music, you know, that lovely dare I say, youthful kind of charge. We're just...
They're always youthful.
Yeah.
But it's so true, though, isn't it?
That's so great. And just one of them good things that happens, I kind of wait to get, once this COVID thing's gone, hopefully, we could even talk about, getting up there and playing live, that would be that would be brilliant.
If you get the green light, right, how quickly can you get on the road?
What do you reckon, Hank?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess if you said, get together a couple of weeks, putting everything together, I would think.
Yeah, simple as that. Wow, that's impressive. Brian, we all know what you like to do in your spare time. If it's not cars, it's making shows, telly shows, with other amazingly talented people. How's that been going?
Oh, I love me cars, as do you, just a car nut, like to go on these, rallies, nice and easy. No, I used to race, but now... I run along
beside him.
To keep so when I go on these rallies now, which are great, which is just lots of fun and lots of car nuts getting together.
Angus, what do you like to do in your downtime?
I'm a big watcher of old TV. I'm usually scouring the things, looking for old series. Like shows like the Beverly Hillbillies or the Munsters or something like that.
Yeah. The Munsters, I love it.
Don't forget F Troop there.
I mean, that's real art. I watch the high cultural stuff.
Yeah, of course you do. And there's so much of it nowadays. Have you seen any of Brian's interview shows on Sky?
Yeah, I've seen. I think a few times I've seen him on there, but okay. I see him live. So I.
What's the point?
Angus, is there anything you haven't achieved yet in music that you would want to? Or are you? I'm not done. It's not over. But are you content musically? Is everything of all the boxes been ticked?
I like doing what I do. This is what I do best. Is making, it's just making, songs and ideas and playing, with AC/DC. That's really what I do best.
Love it. Right, okay. Cheers. Happy birthday. Bye-bye. Love you guys. Get out there soon.
Bye-bye.
Come on.
Okay, thanks,
the world needs you. The world needs AC/DC. Come on!
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From the ballroom to sewing bees, our next guest is a presenter that can do it all. Her debut book, Quite, is out now, and here with her take on life's most taxing subject, including melted cheese, voicemail, and eyeliner, is the hostess with the mostess. It's the Quite All Right, Claudia Winkleman.
All right, Clodge.
That was very lovely.
When I heard you'd written a book, I thought, that's not like Claudia, because that means she's going to have to be interviewed about it, and she doesn't like being interviewed about anything.
By the way, and you know how bad I am. I'm so bad at being... There's nothing I could... I mean, I've somebody interviewed me yesterday. I said, whatever you do, don't buy the book. Let's talk about you. And, the publishers are livid. There's nothing I can say makes it all right.
You don't say dissimilar on page one. You do... It's like you give some kind of warning to people who might not want to buy the book. Because, often, in bookshops, you'll turn to the first page, you read the first page, and basically you say, this might not be for you.
A, it might not be for you, and B, in most books they have quotes from brilliant people on there going, whatever you do, buy this book. And instead we use quotes from my kids who were like, I think my 8-year-old said, can I highly recommend a David Walliams instead? I was like, yeah, we'll put that on the book. That'll be fine. I mean, lockdown happened and I thought, and I was very bad at homeschooling. I don't know, but I was chronically, I thought, we've always known that teachers are extraordinary, but I was amazed about the amount of patience I'd have. So I was like, right, I've got to get my husband to do that. Maybe I'll just try and write. And I used to write a column for Sunday Times. So I was like, maybe I'll write something important or something interesting. And neither of those things happened. Turns out I wrote about eyeliner and melted cheese and why you should never go out with somebody who can't get you in a cab with vim. And I can't apologise enough.
Well, you did and you didn't, Claudia, because I have to pull you up there. Because some of it's silly, but some of it's really sincere. And we think you're conflicted with your writing.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
I love you. Well, some of it... I mean, I write about nurses. I write about my eldest leaving home. I write about The Wonder of Teachers. I wrote a lot about art. I didn't realise, but that just sort of came tumbling out of me because I studied it forever. And my dad used to let me only look at one painting when I was little. And anyway, I fell in love with it. And then, but then nobody just wants to read that from me. And then I've also got to write, you know, I wrote 4,000 words about Sports Day and the horror of the egg and spoon and how insane I get. So, yeah, it's all there.
No, it is. No, don't apologise for it. I know you play the irony card, which is your calling card, and I love it. But there is definitely two Claudies in this book, and that I found that fascinating. That wasn't your intention, but that's what screams off the page.
That's it. It was not my intention. I mean, I just like banging away at a laptop, and I really enjoyed it. And I said to HarperCollins, who are the sweetest publishers in the whole, I was like, genuinely, you mustn't take it. You know, if it's, and they went, look, have a go. Have a go, and it got me out of making inedible food. One day I made butternut squash with sardines. Can you imagine? And they said, have a go. And then I was like, well, sort of, this is what I've done. What do you, you know, but it's absolutely up to you.
So you have the comical stuff, and you have the real stuff. So, like, you know, school trip to Venice and things like that. And the flow to those pieces is absolutely gorgeous. The funny stuff is genuinely really funny. And my wife absolutely loves it. She said, I love it when she does all this stuff. But I've got to tell you, I prefer the other stuff. By the way, it's not a comparison. It's not. Making a comparison, but it can be incomparable. It's just that it is a fantastic book, so congratulations. But which did you find easiest? Always want a break from the other, and is it the perfect combo, the two Claudias?
I don't know. It's such a good question. I found, you know, I liked, I mean, let's not use the word funny. That's a slight exaggeration.
No, but it is funny. You can't say, you play the self-deprecating card all the time. But, you know.
I don't mean to do it because I know it's annoying. I don't mean that. It's just because I wouldn't I wouldn't call myself a writer. You know, I feel more like.
But you've got a book out.
Well, I know, it's confusing, isn't
it? Did somebody ghostwrite it for you?
No,
right.
Absolutely
so you've
not.
Written a book, so therefore you're a writer. So get over it, okay?
All right, you're very sweet. Okay, I love this. This is brilliant, bit of mentoring. Got ya. So I liked both. And what I did is I sort of have 8 pieces on the go at the same time. So I could go in and write quite a lot about you must stay with the boy if he runs you a hot bath. And shouting, I've turned the taps on, is not running a hot bath, just so we're clear. And so I did all of that, and that was a laugh. But then there were some things that I wanted to get down, like nurses, or like my eldest leaving home, or the bit where you bring the baby home from hospital, or whatever, it, you know. And so I saw them as more, not a book, but a collection of columns, I suppose, or essays.
Yeah,
I think they call them essays.
It's a collection of Claudias. So, you know, if you're an autobiography, you could call it I Claudia as opposed to I Claudius. But you should call it We Claudia because you know, we all have different versions of ourselves for different places, different people. And, you know, we even have different versions of ourselves for ourselves. And once you accept that, it's okay.
That's absolutely right. And also, in the bits that are where I'm taking the mic and I'm going, you have to find a boy who will laugh at your joke 14 times. You know, my best friend, she's the funniest person alive. She'll sit there, she'll tell the story. And what I love most is I look over at her partner who is glowing in her, in the fact that we all love the moment. And he's heard that story. It happened 2 weeks ago. And it's a big build-up and it's funny. You know those nights when you're out with friends and you're knackered and you don't want to go, and you go and you find yourself banging the table because you're laughing so hard. So even though I write it with a slightly a mic take, I really do mean it.
No, you...
You know, so there, I really think that being with somebody who, when you're about to get to the punchline, goes, oh, God, this again, or it didn't happen like that, or does anybody want some wine? You know those boys where you're like, oh, this is all a bit uncomfortable. I think you should move out. So even that, you know, I mean, Sports Day, idiot. Anyway, whatever. So I sort of wang on about that. And this desperate need, we all have to be perfect. We shouldn't do that. Yeah. So I think that sort of underlies.
Right.
But I mean, who knows?
All right. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Claudia Winkleman's Quite is out now. Love, Life and Eyeliner. And it's published by HarperCollins from this very building.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave, over to you. Who are we talking to next on the show?
He's written more smash hit crime thrillers than You've Had Hot Dinners. The latest installment in his Rebus series, A Song for the Dark Times, is out now. And here to walk through the murky backstreets and beyond is a man that writes thrilling crime that's akin to a fine wine. It's the superb Ian Rankin.
Good morning, Ian Rankin.
Hey, morning from Edinburgh.
How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's a bit early for me, but let's keep going.
A Song for the Dark Times. It's already out. People are already loving it. They've texted us in there. Thousands, well, hundreds, definitely, to tell us. I'd like to say thousands, but I would be lying. But you'll take hundreds.
God bless you.
You'll take hundreds, won't you, Ian?
Oh, well, I'll take hundreds at this stage in the game. Yeah.
Just to this show. Ian Rankin, the new John Rebus thriller, A Song for the Dark Times. It is out now. It's been out since last Thursday, as I say. So a few circumspect questions about it, first of all. Is the bit about John Lennon and Yoko Ono true?
Yeah, if you mean about them having a car crash and ending up in a hospital in Golspie, which is in northeast of Scotland, yes, it's true.
That is
they were
true.
They were heading up towards Durness. Durness is way up on the north coast, very close to where the action in my book takes place. Rebus walks into a pub and the first thing he sees is a photograph of John Lennon and he asks why. And he said, because the guy had family connections here. He used to have family holidays up in the north coast of Scotland. He also had family in Edinburgh. There's photographs of him wandering around the streets of Edinburgh. He and Yoko and one or two of the kids were heading up to the north of Scotland. The car went off the road. We're not sure why. They ended up in hospital, where, of course, he was asked for his autograph. You know, lying in a hospital bed, recovering from a car crash.
Yeah.
And somebody was asking for his autograph. So, yeah, that did happen.
That would be a selfie, of course. So, like Rebus and his associates, past and present and hopefully future, have a murder wall back at headquarters, do you have a fun fact wall and you want to get some fun facts in your novel?
No, it's serendipity. It's happy chance finds. You know, I mean, until I went on this drive up to the far north of Scotland to you know, look at the place where I was going to set the book, I'd kind of forgotten that John Lennon story. I'd forgotten that he had family up there. There's a kind of garden in his memory that's up in Durness. And I just thought, well, I'm a music fan. I'm a huge music fan. The book has music in it, A Song for the Dark Times. I mean, it's actually, you know, got a song in the title. I just thought it would be really nice to get a John Lennon mention in the book. Because, I mean, you know, Edinburgh prides itself on having an original member of the Beatles, of course. Stu Sutcliffe was born in Edinburgh. But I just thought, let's claim John Lennon as well. Why not?
Okay, good. All right, now, this is more obvious, I suppose. The World War II prison camp phenomenon, this is obviously a thing. I mean, how prevalent a thing is it in Scotland? How common is this knowledge?
I mean, these were internment camps. So at the beginning of World War II, what happened was we started to mistrust our neighbours and our friends, the people who sold us bread in the morning, the people who ran the local ice cream shop or the German deli. And Churchill announced that he wanted them all locked up. And we duly locked up all these people, all the men, not the women and children. The Isle of Man became basically a floating prison camp. And they were interned because they were different from us and they might be the enemy. And we were being told that anybody who wasn't like us was the enemy. And, yeah, there were lots of them in Scotland. I mean, there were over 1,000 in the UK. You can look on Wikipedia. There were well over 1,000 in the UK, and there were a few dozen in Scotland, of which a few still exist as sort of tourist destinations, places where you can go and see what it would have been like to be incarcerated there. And I just thought it was an extraordinary story, and I came across it years ago in a newspaper. There was an interview with someone who was writing a book about it. I stuck it away in a folder called Ian's Big Folder of Ideas, which is what I do. And then when it comes time to start a new book, I get out Ian's Big Folder of Ideas
and I sit through it, looking
for something that grabs my attention. Now, this cutting from a newspaper hadn't grabbed my attention the four or five times previously I'd looked at it. But it was something to do with the present day, I think, actually. It was something to do with the fact that, you know, I can see us heading in that direction again, this polarisation, friends and enemies, you're with us or against us.
Yeah.
The rise of the right in various countries around the world. The sense that, you know, you're only ever one or two steps away from the past coming back to haunt you.
What I love about this, which is why you're such a genius, is that it starts off, you know, what you set it up, but it's so normal from, you know, somebody's alleged to have been murdered, somebody's suspected to have been murdered, and somebody else has gone missing. And that's where you start. And when do you feel confident enough to start weaving the twists in to that very simple, almost binary beginning, as far as the reader's concerned, compared to how far you are along that journey yourself? How much do you need to know about those twists and turns before you start to introduce them into the book?
I don't know anything about them when I introduce them to the book. I make it up as I go along. I mean, people go, no, come on. A lot of people who don't read crime fiction reckon it must be reverse engineered.
Yep.
You start at the end with the what happened, and then you work your way backwards, putting in all the clues. No, I start at the beginning, and I'm very linear in my thinking. And as I go along, I am the detective. I know as little as the detective. As the detective is meeting people, asking them questions, finding out about their life, how they connect to other people. So I'm finding out about that. So it's usually two-thirds of the way through the first draft when I suddenly go, oh, you did it. You know, you are the killer, and this is why you did it. But it always comes as a lovely surprise to me and if it comes as a surprise to me, Chris,
yes,
I reckon it might be coming as a surprise to you as the reader.
Well, that's why you're so clever, Ian. That's why you do this for a living at the age of 60, sunny at 60. How far do we go? Do you want to say anything else about the plot of this one? Because I've gone as far as everything I've read has advised me to go. Have we gone far enough with this?
Yeah.
You sure?
I mean, the thing I would say about the book is, I mean, basically it's about a father whose daughter may have committed a crime, and he does. And is he going to be a father and try and protect her at all costs, even if that means framing someone? Or is he going to be a detective, because he's a detective to his very DNA? And if it ends up she did it, he's going to put her away. That is the moral dilemma at the heart of the book.
All right, pal. Well, great to talk to you, Ian. Thank you so much for your time.
No, man, I really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
All
enjoy
right,
the rest of your day. I'm up for some coffee and chocolate.
All right, 5-pack if available. Ian Rankin, the new John Rebus thriller is out now. A Song for the Dark Times.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, we've heard from three top-notch guests already, but there's still so much more to come. The man that brings the sass to Strictly, Craig Revel, Horwood Darlings, takes us through his new novel, his debut novel, Dances and Dreams on Diamond Street. Sounds great, set in Camden in the 90s. Fellow judging partner, Her Royal Highness the Queen of Strictly, Shirley Ballas, tells wonderful stories from her new autobiography, Behind the Sequins. Hell-raising screamer and thoroughly nice bloke, Corey Taylor from Slipknot and Stone Sour, discusses his brand new solo album, CMF. Bonafide national acting treasure Rupert Everett reveals the hard graft behind making the movie that nearly broke him in his new memoir, To the End of the World. All of that and more still to come. So let's get right back to the action. Dapper Dave, who's next?
I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. It's new music from Mel C. Well, stop right now and say thank you very much, because it's here. Her new album, Melanie C, is out now, and here to tell us more is the go-to spice in anyone's rack. It's the one and only Melanie C.
Hi, Melanie.
What an intro. Good morning, everyone.
He's the best, isn't he?
Absolutely.
So here you come. Here you arrive in your newsreader's outfit with your newsreader's glasses. If only we had a bulletin for her to read. Oh, we do.
She's very welcome
it's
to do the 10 o'clock.
What's going down with you? What's been happening? What's been going on?
Oh my goodness, what a world we are living in.
Yeah, I know.
I've released a new album this week.
I know.
Which has been brilliant but weird in these times. And it's kept me focused and it's kept me busy through the weirdness. So I'm very excited and it's lovely to be here to chat to you about it.
So this is your 8th solo album?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I know, it's been a long time. Wannabe is going to be 25 next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time, isn't it? And I've kept busy. And you know what? I feel really grateful that I'm still here and still able to release music.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many industries are being affected by the pandemic. Music is one of them, live music. So, you know, my heart goes out to everybody who's struggling through this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you still have a tour scheduled for next year. We've just heard in the last half an hour that live music is back at the O2. From when is it, Rich? Live music back at the O2 from December. Okay, and so what they're going to do is they're going down from a capacity of 20,000 to, they're going to have 4,700. So it's beginning to come back, which is amazing.
Oh, it's so good. And you know what? Everybody has had to adapt in every area and aspect of their lives. And there has to be a way for live music to come back.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. Obviously, the small venues are really struggling. And I've just announced, actually, we are going to do some acoustic shows at the end of May. I've got a tour April, May. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that will happen. But I'm trying to support local businesses. Bunkert Records in Kingston. You can go down, you can purchase the album and you get a ticket for an acoustic show. And we're doing one in Brighton as well, which will be on the 29th of May.
Now, this is a bit serendipitous, isn't it? You know what I'm going to say next, don't you, Vassos?
Kingston!
Yeah, so yesterday we go to have a conversation with Roger Daltrey at his house for the podcast. And ironically, so the Who was supposed to play these massive gigs this year, Wembley Stadium. They played last year as well. And that was all scheduled for the summer. Obviously, that didn't happen, right? Mm. But warming up for this big, massive tour, this, you know, your archetypal Who rock and roll stadium and arena tour, the last gig they happened to have played to date was in Kingston. So Kingston's, maybe
How
it's, what's
funny.
Going on with Kingston?
Yeah, well, I'm playing a venue called St Luke's.
That's where they played?
No way.
Yes, it is.
Well, I'm in good company.
I know.
Aren't I? Well, yeah, I'm going to be getting back in there at the end of May, so...
How come you're playing St Luke's? How come you chose St Luke's?
Do you know what? It wasn't me. I can't take the credit for
right.
that. It was something that my team came up with, and Bunkert Records, which is a great record store, independent,
yeah.
you know, supporting small businesses as
uh-huh.
well. Yeah, and they just came up with this brilliant idea. In fact, I'm doing a Q&A tonight as well, which is linked to the record shop. We did loads of vinyl bundles on this album.
Vinyl
which is
bundle!
Really, yeah, we did like a blue one and a lilac one, and it's so lovely to see vinyl back on the rise, and so lovely to know there are still some record shops out there surviving.
I know. Well done to everybody who's doing anything, keeping anything going, especially, you know, if you're experiencing some kind of growth, unbelievable, performing miracles. Now, we know you can hack it acoustically, because the last time we saw you play acoustically was, Rachel?
With Alex in the horn section.
Woo! Well, I worked with Alex in the summer, actually. We did Peter Crouch's show.
Yeah, you did.
And it was so good to see him. And we sang When You're Gone, on a little bit of it, a little skitty version.
You sang it. Alex joined
he
in.
It was great. He was great. But great memories. We had a great day, didn't we? But when was that? A couple of years back?
It was Christmas, wasn't it? Because it's
yeah.
Rick Stein's restaurant. It was for children
yeah.
in need, all those lovely bidders. You popped up, gorgeous, as always. You've been so supportive. You keep popping up everywhere. And the Frothy Coffee Man never tells me where he's booked you for. And he goes, Mel, and everybody loves you, Mel. Of course they love you. They love you. And then we all went to the pop quiz. Do you remember afterwards?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we were talking about it off air, weren't we? Carnage
yeah.
was, I think, the word.
Well,
I've
had some experiences in my life, but I think I unraveled that night. I've never had that one. You know where you just unravel? I thought, this is unravelable.
We got very competitive in the pub quiz.
Well, I mean, that was in my local pub, and I was
not
due-
anymore.
I was due in there a couple of nights later, and I didn't know whether, I mean, for the first time since I was a teenager, I didn't know what sort of reception I'd get in the pub. Whether it would be, do you know what, we did really good business that night, thanks, or whether it would be, do you know what you were doing two nights ago?
And?
Get out.
And what did they say?
It was a little bit of both.
Man, it's great to see you.
Lovely to see you.
Okay,
thank you.
So Spice Girls news might happen when? Any ideas? Is any ideas for?
Well, you know what? To be realistic, I would love to be back on stage with the girls. I doubt it would happen before 2022,
right.
Unfortunately.
But probably then.
I hope so.
And maybe more global, a bit more global.
Yeah, that's what I would like.
So
that's what I'm pushing for. Me and Mel B are really getting on everyone's nerves.
Okay, another movie maybe?
That's not on the cards at the moment.
Come on, Richard E. Grant's now Academy Award nominated.
I know.
He can't wait to get back in the role.
How amazing is that? No, that would be amazing. But, you know, obviously this year for me, big year having the solo record
yeah,
out
good
there.
For you.
But beyond that, hopefully more solo stuff and more Spice
all right.
stuff.
Well, lovely to see you.
Thank you, you too.
You're on top, top form.
Thank
you. Okay, so here we go. A little taster of all the tracks from Melanie's 8th album.
That's who I am. Pushing me to overload.
No better moment to rip your world. Come take a dive, won't you?
How's it sound?
I think you've done a beautiful job there.
It wasn't me.
I definitely buy this album.
Okay. All right. Well, she doesn't need to, but you can. Melanie C. It's out now. Ta-da, everybody. Sorry. Ta-da, everybody. Thanks, Mel.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's the go-to guy if you want catty critique of your cha-cha, but now he's turned his attention from the stage to the page. His first ever novel, Dances and Dreams on Diamond Street, is out now. And here to tell us how it all came together, waltz and all, it's the Strictly Slayer himself, Craig Revel Horwood.
Darling! Where have you been all my year? How are you?
Oh, I've been sitting waiting for you, darling. Waiting.
Well, now I'm here.
You are, and it's fantastic. Good morning, all.
Good morning, good morning. Dances and Dreams on Diamond Street. Pray tell what might go on within this tome.
It's based on true stories, really. From, you know, all the ones, the stories I couldn't actually put into my autobiography. And I thought, what can I do with all these wonderful stories? Right. And in lockdown, I thought, I know, I'll write a book. So I based one of the characters, Danny Hall, who is a dancer who's coming to a crossroads in his life and wants to become a choreographer. I know there's a parallel there, definitely, with me. And so I've kept him as the sort of main person in the book. And it's about all these people living in Camden Town in 1994 in a house share, and all the trials and tribulations of that. It's sort of like Tales of the City meets Sex and the City, if you like, but set in 1994 in Camden and based on all those wonderful stories. You know, there's some fantastic stories in there about life in general, but mainly all of the characters are at a crossroads in their life and all trying to become something in London, in the Big Smoke. They've come from all over the world and met in this one sort of nucleus, and it's all their dilemmas, really. There's romance in it, of course. It's a bit offbeat. There's funny moments. There's some really sad moments, but it's a novel and fiction, obviously, but based on a set of truths, I suppose, that I've embellished, you know, to make the characters rounder and bigger and bolder. And it was so much fun to write, I've got to say, in lockdown, and gave me something, a creative outlet, because, of course, all the theatre work that I had planned for this year has completely dried up and gone on to next year. So I was left, like a lot of people, sort of hung and sort of quartered, really, in a way. So it was wonderful to be able to do something, you know, creative with my time. And that's what I did.
Well, it sounds really juicy. I love it. First of all, I love the fact it's in the 90s and it's in Camden, because I lived in Camden in the 90s in a bedsit. You know, and there's London, but then there's Camden in London, and then, you know, through in the 90s. And it was so exciting, wasn't it, Craig?
Yeah, I loved it. All the shops were still shops. And actually, the market, Camden Market, as you probably remember, was still an antiques market and fair and stuff like that. So it was a really bohemian sort of time to be there. And it's just when fax machines had come out as well. And some people, if they could afford them, had mobile phones, you know. So there wasn't that explosion of technology yet, you know, so people had to actually, if you're going to meet up with someone, you had to put that in your filer bag and say, right, I'll meet you at Camden Town Station at 1 o'clock. And there's always the dilemma of how long do you wait for someone?
So true. Yeah. I used to get Fridays off, because I used to work Monday, Thursday and Sunday. And I used to get Fridays off. And that waiting for your mate to turn up, to come up those escalators at Camden Town Tube Station. Because we had a market stall. We had a market stall at the stables. And being a stall holder was really cool, because you were part of the, the network, the wiring of the place.
I remember that. I actually came down and saw you in your stall, darling.
Did you really?
Bizarrely. Yeah, I wasn't anyone then. And it was great. I went to come and have a look and see, you know, a star in action. And it was brilliant.
But
you know, there were so many fantastic stories associated with my 5 years living at that particular house. And I really and truly was at a crossroads in my life as well at the same time. And, you know, those people became my ultimate friends. They really, really did. And I'm still friends with them to today. And the beauty is, of course, I've written this book and I have told them about it, but they'll all be guessing who they are, of course, in the novel, you know, because it is based on a lot of the stories, you know, that went on in that particular time and period, which is fun.
Well, I've got it. I haven't read it, I'll be honest with you, Craig, but I've got it in my bag and I'm going to read it. It sounds amazing. Have you read it?
Oh, you will love it.
Oh, hang on. Rachel has read it.
Hello, I've started it and I love it. It flows so easily. The characters just spring to life off the page. Honestly, I'm really into fiction and novels. But you write brilliantly. How long did it take you to do it?
Well, it was a year, really. But I mean, the hardest work, I suppose, happened actually in lockdown. You know, that's when I had time to look at it rather than sort of banging anything out. I decided to have a re-look at it, make sure all the characters sort of worked in a way, you know. So I had time this time to do it. You know, a lot of times when you're writing, you have to put everything together really, really quickly. So it was really lovely to go back over it and also offer it up to my sister, who's a wonderful writer, and say, Sue, what do you think? You know, and the editor, you've got time to actually talk about it and talk through the characters really well. So that was the most exciting thing. And I've got so many stories left in me.
Can't wait.
But the beauty is it's fiction, so you can go absolutely anywhere you like with the characters.
Right, we've got to go, Craig. Listen, thanks so much. Yes, so much. Thanks so much for being on Dancing Dreams on Diamond Street. Rachel's read a couple of chapters. I'm definitely going to read it this weekend.
Perfect half-term page flicker.
Page flicker?
Yeah.
I've never heard of a page flicker before. Thank you, Craig. Good night. Bye-bye. Ta-da.
Bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Waltzing her way to the top of the Strictly Come Dancing tree, our next guest has been there and done it. Her autobiography, Behind the Sequins, is out now. So please stand back as we pass her doble out the red carpet for the best the ballroom has to offer. It's the brilliant Shirley Ballas.
Hi, Shirley.
Hello.
You look amazing. And this is about the BBC wardrobe and all the lights and all the makeup. You look stunning.
Thank you. Wow. Sexy at 60. That's what it is, you see.
Beyond and forever. Behind the Sequins out now in hardback, as Dapper Dave rightly pointed out there. So it's caused a few headlines already. What's been the juiciest bits that's caused the most fuss so far?
Well, I think generally people have enjoyed reading. It's an inspiring journey.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's got all the family things in. It's got the husbands I was married to and fiancés and drama and everything coming at a personal huge cost. My brother's suicide. There's been a lot of headlines, people picking out different parts in the book. I think it's really quite inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to write an autobiography, you know, write one or don't bother. And you've definitely gone for the former option there. I mean, you know, no stone unturned.
Correct.
I would imagine. I don't know, but I would imagine that's the case. So talent, love and honesty. Wonderful. Where do we begin? I suppose we start with your most prized possession, which I would imagine were those dancing shoes your mum bought you.
Oh, yes. The little dancing dress and the shoes that I never let go of when I was about 7. Because if I'd have lost those, I certainly wasn't getting another pair, that's for sure.
Okay, so in Citizen Kane, it's his sledge, it's his rosebud. But for you, it's that dress and those shoes. And your mum could barely afford them at the time, I'm imagining.
She couldn't, so she used to save up, and she had about 3 jobs, and she just did everything that she could to put me through dance, even though her friends told her, you're wasting your time, this child will never get off a housing estate. And I love the line that she put in the book, it was a very, very difficult to give her what she needed, but I guess I backed the right horse. So I think that she had the last laugh with her friends at the end of the day.
And not too far from Aintree, where the Grand National is from, of course.
Ah, you see.
So on the Wirral, what was dancing and what was the relationship between your kind of dancing and the world of the Wirral when you were a little girl?
Well, the world of the Wirral was just a very small space to me because I was just used to the housing estate. And I think I was very fortunate that they put the dancing classes on at the local church hall and that I used to do the guides there. So I'd go there every week and then suddenly this dancing started. And I just fell in love with the music. I can still remember it was Wheels. It was called Wheels. It was a cha-cha-cha. And I just asked the guy, I said, you know, I'd love to be able to do this. And he said, oh, we're starting children's class. And that was it. So I would rather think that dancing found me. You know, that music. I was just so inspired.
Well, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because as a kid, you know, as kids, we often have, well, we seem to have more time than as grown-ups. And we gave ourselves time and space for things to be able to find us, as opposed to chasing things. Because you didn't have any means to chase them anyway. Didn't even own a bike, most of us. Didn't have a phone for years and years and years, things like that. And do you think you obviously loved it straight away? You know, does love, passion, commitment equal talent, or is love plus talent equaling success. Did you feel like you were naturally talented or not?
Well, I don't think at seven you realise that. What I did have and which I got from my mother was immense work ethic. So I wouldn't say I was the most talented, but definitely the most dedicated. So I was the one that never missed the classes, come rain or shine.
Yep.
I walked there all the time, two miles to get there, didn't have the bus fare, and I never missed it. So I would say I had obviously some talent, not the most talented, but I was probably the most dedicated.
Did you find it difficult at all?
I found everything in my life to be quite difficult. It just always never seemed like a straight line. There was always obstacles in the way, so everything right throughout my life just always felt like I was constantly swimming upstream.
I get that, but that's why I asked the question. But how about the dancing? Was the dancing the one thing that didn't feel like that?
The dancing was the one thing I could lose myself in and totally immerse myself in. And the love of music and the love of movement throughout the body was what captivated me.
So there was a flow there. There was a freedom there within it.
At the flow, the freedom, the sense of escape from a housing estate where everybody was doing up to all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was occupied with something that was just immensely musically moving. I just love it. I still love it to this day.
You can tell. And you talk about it. When you talk about dance, you talk in a different voice. You have a different look in your eyes when you talk about anything else. So what was the first tipping point? What was the first point of realisation where not only yourself, if yourself at all, but those around you thought, actually, we might be onto something here with this one?
Well, it was my mother. She said she couldn't believe how I used to walk up there in the rain, in the snow, never missed. And she said, while ever you do that, I will continue to try to provide to the best I can. So she took loads and loads of menial jobs and did different. We'd sew the sequins on, we'd do everything ourselves. And she was just determined that while ever I tried that hard and never gave up, she would equally try. And I think that, you know, by age 11, I got the opportunity to get a little boy partner. And then it all began to be more difficult because then we didn't have a car. So I used to have to get two buses and a train at age 10 and 11 through Liverpool, running across from the Ribble bus station to the train station. I can still remember it. Back then, there was no social media. So you weren't so aware of things that happen now to young kids and things. But there was still that feeling that it was like scary in the dark.
Yeah, yeah.
Always had to find my way everywhere and had to find my return journey home.
All right, well done, Shirley. Great to
thank
see you.
You.
You're on fine form.
Oh,
you're on really, really, really excellent form. Shirley Ballas, Behind the Sequins, out now. A proper, proper book.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From the power of Slipknot to the melodic rock of Stone Sour, his music has defined a generation. His debut solo album, CMFT, is out now. And here to tell us all about it is a man that was wearing a mask way before it became law. It's the legendary voice of the one, the only, Corey Taylor!
Good morning, Las Vegas! Good morning, Corey Taylor!
How you doing, man? What's going on?
Well, everything's going on here. Thank you for staying up so dang late. What time is it there now?
It's almost 1 a.m.
It's almost 1 a.m.
Yeah, we're doing good. But we're good.
Thank
we're good.
You.
To wake my kids up, you know.
You sound really sort of with it.
Well, I snuck into the kitchen and ate a bunch of sugar, so now I'm like kind of ready, you know.
I bet you didn't. Corey, for people who don't know, and forgive me for this, but I just want people to have an idea of who I'm talking to in a bit of past, you know, like an alien landing. You know, this is Corey Taylor, this is my friend Corey, and this is what he used to do. So, oh, and still does. So Slipknot, just, you know, can you give us just half a minute on Slipknot for people who aren't aware of Slipknot?
Oh dear God. We're the band that scared the hell out of everybody about 21 years ago, and we still get to do it. Nine dudes who play metal with masks, coveralls. Like, it's still crazy that we still get to do this, to be honest. Like, it's pretty rad.
You came on my show on TFI Friday. I think it was your first live performance out of the US, and I can't tell you. I mean, you know, it wasn't an unexciting show, TFI Friday. Lots of things happen on it, usually on a weekly basis. But the feather, when you said you guys were going to turn up, it was unprecedented. Now, why do you think you caused such a stir? What the heck was it about your... And still do, but people know who you are now. But, I mean, what was right. going on? What was the elixir? What was the magic potion then?
I think it was the right band at the right time. You know, we had the right music. Because the music was ferocious. It was genre bending. We also had the look. We had the art. You know, we weren't coming off as a gimmick. We were coming off as something that was more art metal than anything else. And I think because of all that stuff, it was just so ethereal and esoteric and visceral that just people responded to it and they still do, which is, I mean, we're pretty fortunate, man.
Yeah, no, unbelievably so. And you, by the way, you sum it up really well there, because, you know, the kids that are in our audience, the kids watching the TV show at the time, not just here, but all over the world, kids love different. They just want different. Yeah. They want different today. They want it tomorrow. They want different forever until they become the same.
Right, exactly. I mean, and it's for us. I mean, that was the whole reason that we started Slipknot, was because we just kept waiting for a band to do the type of music that we wanted to hear. And nobody was doing it. So we just decided to do it on our own, you know? And once we did that, once we took that initiative, we ran with it, and we're still doing it.
Right. So that's Slipknot. And then there's Stone Sour. Right. Now, Stone Sour happened because why?
Well, Stone Sour was the band that I was in and left to join Slipknot in 1997. I started putting Stone Sour back together when I felt like I wasn't getting a chance to write enough music in Slipknot. And that was largely because the guys in Slipknot write so well in that style that, of course, it made sense that, you know, they would handle a lot of like the music and stuff. But I still felt like I had a lot of music to contribute. So that the ashes of that old band kind of started to come back up, and I was able to kind of pick up the role as a singer-songwriter again.
You sound so stable. You sound so calm. You sound like it's always been good. Has it always been good?
No, God, no. No, man. I was a mess for, you know, especially in the beginning, you know. It's like when we really started to take off, I mean, you're talking about basically babies who were now thrown into the mouths of fame and all of the trappings that kind of went around with it, man. So I, you know, all those cliches that we fought against all came crashing in on us like, you know, waves on a sandcastle. And I got caught up in it. You know, there was probably a good 4 or 5 years that are a complete blur and pretty blank for me.
Really?
But I remember waking up one day and really going, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, you know, like, and you know, my sobriety had some stutters and starts and whatnot. But then about 10 years ago, I had my last drink and that was it. And I've been sober ever since. And I'm just slowly but surely really kind of trying to, you know, stay healthy and be able to do this for another 20 years, you know?
Well, you have that air about you. You have the air of a human being that, because they talk about recovery, of course, that's the term used, but I heard it framed this morning as returning as well. And I really like that, returning to who you hopefully really are. Returning.
Right, right.
Do you like returning?
That's great. Yeah. And honestly, in a way, it can also mean returning to the ideal that you hope to be, you know, like not even necessarily coming back to who you used to be, but that, you know, we all start out with that idea of who we'd like to be as people. And when you give all that up, when you get rid of the haze and the fog, and you really start to kind of come back to that ideal that you really wished you could be, that's when it becomes achievable, you know, and that reality is just out of reach. So you just dedicate every day to trying to, you know, be that person, especially when you have a family.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Corey, it's a joy to talk to you, my friend. Joy to talk to you.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
And how was the gig on Friday? You played a live gig,
didn't you? I'm just glad I'm coherent. Yeah, man. Yeah, it was rad. We did this big thing from the Forum, and it was strange. Like, we were giving it and giving it, and then we'd get done with the song, and then you could just hear silence. You could hear the decay in the back of the room, and it was just like, okay, this is probably the weirdest show we've ever played. But it was so rad, and the reaction has been great. Like, people are really digging it. And we played the album, and it's full.
Corey, can I tell you, for once and for all, that was not the weirdest show you've ever played?
No, no.
Because I don't know if you've gone, but you're in Slipknot. Anyway, rock and roll, my friend. Give our love to Las Vegas. Good luck with the virtual homeschooling. Come and see us when you can. You are the man. Corey Taylor's brand new album, CMFT, can't tell you what most of that stands for, is out now. Corey Taylor, what a lovely man.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave has another big intro for us. Who's next, David?
If you thought making movies was all glitz and glam, then think again. His third memoir, To the End of the World, is out tomorrow and details the real hard graft. Here to tell us all about it is not simply an actor. He is a thespian, and he is the very best of them. It's the brilliant Rupert Everett!
Good morning, Ripper.
Good morning. How are you?
We're very well. Your book is amazing. You're such a good writer, Mr. Everett.
Oh, thank you very much. That's so sweet to say so.
Rupert, you write so beautifully. You talk so eloquently. You're a brilliant actor. You're a fantastic storyteller. But I think writing is where it's at for you, but it's not really what you do for a living. And I always worry about you. I always think, you know, from your stories in your books, you know, is he all right? Does he need a few quid? Do I need to worry? What's going down at the moment with you?
I definitely need a few quid. That's true. But what's going down at the moment? No, everything's good, really, I think, for the most part. Lockdown started for me. I was on Broadway doing a play, and we'd done 8 performances, and someone in our theatre was one of got COVID, and we closed down with all the other theatres. And my lockdown, you know, I was very lucky to have started writing a bit because I've always had something to do in the lockdown. And I think I feel really sorry for everybody who, you know, couldn't go to their job in a way. And I could keep on with mine, sort of.
But, you know, I love Dickens. I love Oscar Wilde. And if you read any paragraph from either of those two, you know, oh, to write, you know, any single paragraph like that, one paragraph like that in your life, let alone, you know, page after page, book after book. And Rupert, you can't say this about yourself, but I think you're the same. I think your words have a certain otherworldliness to them, a certain flow, a certain ease and a certain elegance and a certain magic and a certain wit that's very rare, you know, in literary talent. And you've won all these awards every time you write something. Why don't you write more?
Well, I do. The thing is, I would love to be like Dickens, but having been brought up as an actor and been used to working in a group, the solitary discipline has been the thing that's been hardest for me to conquer over the writing years. And the kind of thing that happens to you if you're an acting writer, you quite often get despondent. Whereas if you'd started off writing and got used to it more and been able to just churn it out more, that's what I'm aiming at for the future in a way. And I think writing is, I would love to do more writing, but it just takes, it's quite laborious for me.
Yeah,
so it takes a long time to get it out. That's what I'm saying.
It's funny that you say that because it feels as a reader that it comes easy to you, but that's just not the case, you're saying.
No, I think what I'm good at is I can make things a lot better that I've written. Right. So I tinker away at my writing quite a lot. And I think that's what helps it a bit.
All right, let's talk about the book. It is amazing. It's a story about many things. Once again, it's a story about you. And you are self-deprecating throughout, but not in a desperate way to excuse what you do. You do it in a witty way. It's great. It's not an excuse. It's really funny. And
good.
The Happy Prince, this mad film that I loved, and you came into the show and you talked.
Yeah,
we talked about it. And I was like, I was so sort of buoyant about it. And even then you had sort of a look of doom, if not gloom, about you. And you said, I'm not so sure it's going to do all that. And you were right and I was wrong. But before we get there, let's talk about 10 years in the making. Just give people, look back and give people a sort of 10,000 foot take on the story, the particular aspect of Oscar Wilde's life you wanted to tell in your film and you've now written about making in your book.
Well, the thing that really fascinates me about Oscar Wilde is that, in fact, I think he was the first out gay man in modern history. That's to say, he lived in Paris. He was famous, or rather infamous. And you could look at him in the street and recognize him and say, that is a homosexual man. And in a way, that was the first time that had happened, because before that it had been whispers only, and something that nobody talked about. But with his face came, I think, the road to gay liberation. So for me, he is the Christ figure, much better than Christ.
Now, before you go, you've got to tell the story, if you don't mind, about when you were in America and you were there for a preview that didn't go, you know, as you would have wished it to. And you happened to be staying in the hotel that was outside the venue for the Golden Globes, and your good old sparring partner and fellow thesp, Richard E. Grant, who your brother's from another mother, as far as I'm concerned, happened to be pulling up in a limo outside to go to the Golden Globes to see the after party with his beautiful wife, and you would just happen to be there looking down on this, a sight you have witnessed yourself first person many times before, but not that particular night. Now, what did you consider doing? What crossed your mind to maybe save your film when you saw him from a loft several floors up in your hotel room?
Well, a friend of mine had very sweetly sent me a lovely hash chocolate bar, a marijuana chocolate bar, and I'd been nibbling away at it, feeling very depressed. And then I got rather cheerful. And then suddenly I saw, because I realized that the Golden Globes after party was happening in my hotel, so it meant I couldn't even go downstairs without looking like a desperate wannabe. And I cruised the Golden Globes, I mean, you know, with abandon to try and get a nomination, and had failed. And then, to add insult to injury, Richard E. Grant and his wife arrived in a flat blaze of flash bulbs downstairs. And I thought, well, what I should really do is throw myself out of the window now and land splat at their feet, ruin their evening. At least somebody would then have to go and see my film. but of course, I thought better.
Of course,
but I love
you
Richard.
Didn't. So do I, Rupert. Listen. Thank you,
Chris,
thank you
so much.
Oh, mate.
For having me.
And by the way, do you remember when you came in and I loved the film? Why did before you go? Why didn't people like the blimmin' film? It's a great film.
Well, they did like the film, I think. It got great reviews, by the way. The thing was, the heat wave really kind of did it in.
That was it.
I think that was. I mean, you know, everyone searches for reasons, and there are no reasons. But there was a massive heat wave in the 4 weeks after the film came out. No, I think it did. It did good. And it had wonderful reviews. It just didn't do, you know, I dreamt of receiving 4 Oscars.
Yeah, I know you did. And dangling at least 2, one from each ear. But that never happened.
Right.
But in your dreams. Now let's keep those dreams going, Rupert, shall we?
We will. Yeah, keep the dream. All Lots right. of love. Thank you very much indeed.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast. And you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.